Sometimes the solution to nutritional deficiencies doesn't have to be complicated. Milk contains 15 essential nutrients that can play a role in the prevention of chronic diseases, from heart attack and hypertension to type 2 diabetes, even some types of cancer. It's a simple prescription for prevention, rooted in evidence and proven over time. So maybe it's time to rethink milk. Simple, healthy. That's the science of milk.
Hi, I'm Mujala Mali.
I'm Blair Bigham. This is the CMAJ podcast.
So Blair, on today's podcast, we are discussing a phenomenal qualitative research that looks at the process that parents go through to make the decision to vaccinate their children against the COVID-19 virus.
This is going to be a really interesting conversation, Jola, and definitely something that I'm really curious about. I can get so frustrated sometimes having conversations in the emergency department when kids are not vaccinated. I have this gut reaction to it that I really need to check sometimes. And so I'm really curious what we learned today about how best to communicate with parents who have questions about vaccines, particularly new ones like the COVID vaccine. You're a parent, Jola. What did you think when it came time to potentially vaccinate your kid?
For me, it was a bit of an easier decision because I was already part of vaccination programs with in the Black community. Mm. So I've had a lot of information regarding it, and I had a different kind of a nuanced approach to it. So it was a much of an easier decision for me. But I would say I have other friends who chose not to vaccinate their children because they also were not 100% clear on what the actual risk benefit of it was.
Mm-hmm. And I think we sort of have to untangle misinformation, disinformation, you know, poorly communicated correct information, and that everyone digests new information differently. And a one-size-fits-all approach doesn't necessarily work. And I'm very excited to see what our panel today has to say. They are co-authors of the study in CMAJ entitled Parents' Perspectives on SARS-CoV-2 Vaccinations for Children, a Qualitative Analysis. And how about we just jump right into it? The research paper is a fascinating collaboration between physicians, research scientists, and social science researchers, so we've invited all of them to join us today. Dr. Jonathan McGuire is a pediatrician and researcher at St. Michael's Hospital and co-leads a large pediatric research network called Target Kids. Dr. Janet Parsons is a research scientist with St. Michael's Hospital and an associate professor at the University of Toronto in the Department of Occupational Science and Occupational Therapy. And Catherine Hodwitz and Dr. Janet Weigel are clinical research specialists in the Applied Health Research Center at St. Michael's Hospital. Thanks for joining us, everyone.
Good morning.
Good morning.
Thanks for having us.
Jonathan, I'll just start off with you. Tell us, what were you hearing in your clinic from parents about COVID vaccinations once the vaccine became available to children?
Well, what was fascinating early on in the development of the vaccine is that people were pretty cautious about it. And I think understandably, because everybody wants their children, their precious children, to be as healthy as possible. And people were worried about getting the COVID-19 virus, and they were worried about the vaccine being relatively newly developed and some unknowns at the time. There were some clinical trials done on the vaccines, but with relatively low numbers of children involved relative to the number of children that would now be vaccinated. And so parents were worried about giving their children the vaccine. But the kinds of questions we were getting at that time were sort of different than the kinds of questions that we get usually about vaccination. And that made us think that maybe this time around, something was going on that was a little bit different.
So what were the kind of questions that you were getting that surprised you?
So, for example, this is all very new. I don't know if I want to be a guinea pig here. Usually vaccines have been developed over a very long period of time, and we don't get those kind of questions. Or I'm hearing a lot of information from my friends. Everybody's really worried about this. Do I have something to be worried about? We usually don't get those kinds of questions.
And Janet, you've studied public attitudes and perspectives towards vaccinations for many years. What struck you as different this time around concerning what parents were expressing as their concerns for getting the vaccination for their kids?
People were saying about the novelty, as Jonathan has already mentioned, sort of the novelty of the vaccine, the fact that it's been approved quite quickly. That was something that was not something that usually came up because, for example, we've done studies with influenza vaccination, which has been around for many years, and people's perspectives on that were quite different from the perspectives on COVID vaccination.
Janet, you had said that people were nervous about it because it had been rushed. Was it that it was new, or was it the sense that maybe the scientists had been so desperate to find something that they cut corners and literally rushed through something that might not be whole? Or was it just that it was new and it hadn't been really tested and we haven't seen it in action for a couple of years? Or was it a bit of both?
I think it was both, actually. I think it was actually both because people talked about, yes, this is a new vaccine. People talked about the new technology of mRNA versus other forms of vaccine. And so that was less familiar to them. But then there was also, people talked about the number of children, for example, it had been tested in. They had tried to sort of consume studies, right? Try to search for studies to find out how many children it had been tested on before, right? And so that came up in our interviews. And if it's okay, I'm going to look at Jana and Catherine and pass it over to them in case they want to add in on that.
Yeah, so quite a number of our parents talked about the challenge that they felt in sourcing and weighing evidence. And in compared to routine vaccinations where there's a pretty large evidence base supporting them and years of evidence to look back on, we just didn't have that for the COVID vaccines, particularly for children. And so it was just this newness and this sense of wanting to wait just a little bit longer, just to see how things played out and to get a little bit more long-term evidence on potential side effects.
As I'm thinking about how we actually rolled out the vaccine, it seemed as if we relied heavily on social media, the media, to really roll out the vaccine. But what it seems like is from what you guys saw, Jana and Catherine, was that people really wanted it to come from their healthcare providers. Is that correct?
Absolutely. And that was a really loud and clear finding that we heard from parents. Some people enjoyed having the extra attention in the media and by government, and that they found that very compelling to have that level of recommendation. But I would say a lot of the parents wanted it to be a conversation between themselves and their doctor. And one parent in particular said, I really felt like this should have been between me and my doctor. And the fact that government was involved really made me uncomfortable. And had politicians stayed out of it, I may have gotten vaccinated. But the fact that there was that politicization element actually dissuaded them from getting vaccinated themselves or having their child vaccinated.
Catherine and Jana, you conducted the interviews. Are there any other conversations that stick out in your mind?
I think really overall, something that came across from the findings was that this was a challenging decision for all parents, and that even though many parents had higher vaccination rates, almost all parents shared that they had some level of concern about whether to vaccinate their child or not. And that really illustrated to us that this concern fell on a spectrum. It wasn't just that parents were pro-vaccine or anti-vaccine, but rather it fell on a spectrum of what we've called a continuum of concern, which really reflected a range of attitudes around the vaccination for their children, and that it was something that they took really seriously, and they spent a lot of work and effort to find evidence and find information to inform this decision. And then it was something, a really sense of responsibility for making the best decision for their child.
Often when we use the term anti-vaxxer, we think of sort of a certain maybe political angle or argument. Tell me a little bit about how the people you interviewed were compared to that sort of stereotype. Were they anti-vaxxers? Were they hesitant? Were they reluctant?
So from the findings from our work, the parents really came across as concerned about being labeled as an anti-vaxxer or being considered anti-vax. Many of them just felt they couldn't even ask questions or express levels of concern around the vaccination for their children without being labeled as anti-vax. And that really tied into some of the political context at the time. The trucker convoy, the various protests around vaccination and other mandates. And this was all happening while we were doing these interviews with parents and families about vaccinating their children. And many really strongly emphasized their support for other routine childhood immunizations as evidence that, of course, they weren't anti-vax because they had all the other vaccines for their children and they were really in support of vaccines. One parent really said, I'm not against vaccines. I'm not an anti-vaxxer. I'm not anti-Western medicine. I'm just trying to gather information and make the best decision I can for my child. I think another interesting point was that a lot of parents even felt vilified for not wanting to vaccinate their children. And so I think that was from in the media, fear mongering and that kind of messaging that had come across as well, that it had really framed people who were concerned or were had not yet decided about whether or not to vaccinate their children as, you know, really, it really portrayed them in a negative light. And so many even reported vaccinating their children for fear of social exclusion, not being able to see their families, not being able to speak about it with their neighbors and their friends and their friend groups, and even shared one of the main reasons they vaccinated their children was so that they wouldn't be ostracized at school or their child would be able to continue in their extracurricular activities. And many somehow felt coerced into that decision as well. And I think that really speaks to just that level of stigma that was associated with being unvaccinated at that time in the media and just all the different messaging that the public was receiving about vaccination.
That is actually really unfortunate to hear because I'm assuming that is not the intention of pediatricians or like the healthcare community in terms of, you know, what the end goal is. I guess this question is for both Jonathan and Janet is having that type of situation around the COVID-19 vaccination, how do you think that could possibly affect future vaccinations for something like another COVID or something else?
Great question. And, you know, the circumstances during the COVID pandemic, particularly around vaccination, were different than circumstances, I think, at other times. Our research is supporting that families wanted to have conversations with their healthcare providers, while at the same time, the healthcare providers weren't there. You know, it was difficult to see your healthcare provider because practices were closed. The rollout of the vaccine was done at a provincial level at vaccine centers where there was very little discussion that could be had. And so I think those factors came together to make a really different kind of scenario for parents with children. And I'm not sure ahead of time that had been thought through that way. And I think if we were to do it again, all of us sitting back with some evidence in hand, maybe we would do things a little bit differently next time.
I'd just like to support what Jonathan just said. I think that idea, and that came out in these interviews and in other studies that we've done, which is that idea of the trusted healthcare provider, like really that's where those decisions and where those conversations need to happen. And that's definitely what people tell us in different contexts, not just in this context, like that trusted, who do you trust? Who do you go to for that information? Who's a trusted source of information?
I want to go down another sort of avenue that we've heard a lot about, and that's the perceived effectiveness of the vaccines and how that might have played into the reluctance to vaccinate children. Early in the pandemic, we kept saying, oh, children don't seem to be affected, or the vaccines might not be effective. Was there an element that this vaccine just isn't necessary for kids compared to what people were making decisions for themselves, like to as parents getting vaccines?
Definitely. I think that's something that came up a lot. It was that potential lack of efficacy that you just mentioned for the childhood age groups, but also this balancing of collective gains versus individual gains, right? So looking at the collective benefit of getting as many people vaccinated as possible, they were very on board for that when we're speaking about adults. But as soon as we're bringing kids into that, there's sometimes more of a weight put on the individual child and the individual risks and benefits for their own child. And so we saw a lot of parents talking about that, the balancing of recognizing the collective good of, you know, large-scale vaccination programs, but the immense weight of making an individual decision for their own child and their own family. And sometimes not wanting to feel children shouldn't necessarily be held responsible for the collective good of everybody. And so there was a different weight placed on it for their children.
I just was going to build off of the great conversation that's happening here, which is, I think, one of the things that was so interesting about COVID, right, was that the evidence kept changing over time, right? And people were trying to keep up with this and sort of what was the vaccine for, not just about the vaccine, but, you know, was it going to prevent illness? Was it going to prevent transmission? There were a lot of questions people had around that. And then we were interviewing people during the Omicron wave where suddenly people were getting it, even though they'd been vaccinated. So you can imagine that can be confusing for people who aren't experts in vaccination. But that's, I think, true of the broader COVID context as well, because there were other kinds of evidence and policy communications and that kind of thing where people were trying to find their footing, and it kept shifting. And I think that's really challenging for people, right? For people to make sense of it.
There was a recent editorial about this topic in a prominent journal and citing the evidence. And the author said the decision to vaccinate your children against COVID-19 should be an easy one. Yet it's not. And, you know, and I think this is the flavor of what's going on. Unpacking the story, as our group has tried to do, I think is going to be helpful to figuring out what's going on inside homes.
I think something that was evident in the interviews that we conducted with parents as well was that when they're making this decision, they're weighing all kinds of sources of information, and population level statistics is only one piece of the puzzle. And personal anecdotes and stories that they're hearing from friends and family members and colleagues often held a lot more weight. And so that's just another sort of balance of information that was factoring into their overall perceptions and decision making.
So I'm going to take the opportunity here to flow into a conversation about how misinformation was affecting people's decision making and the vaccine campaigns. Janet, I'll start with you. Generally speaking, how did misinformation during COVID differ from misinformation in previous vaccination campaigns or outbreaks?
That's a huge topic, but I think we're in a setting now where social media, where there's like, and that's not to blame it, but more that it's just that we're surrounded by so many sources of information. And so there's a lot of different kinds of information vying for attention, right? And sometimes I think it's very dizzying for anyone to try to make sense of it. And so that sort of, I think that's what played into the misinformation more, was like that there's multiple sort of sources of amplification of different voices. And so that, I think, may be more difficult for people to navigate than, say, in previous eras. I would pass it to my colleagues there, though, and see if they have anything that they'd like to say.
Jenna, Catherine, what were you hearing when you interviewed parents?
One of the questions we asked parents was, what sources of information did you use to make this decision? And as Catherine said previously, it was really a wealth of evidence, but it was just a lot of evidence and information for parents to wade through. And many even went as far to say they didn't listen to the media for information. They didn't go to social media. They shared that they read research papers or government websites as key or trusted sources of information as well. I think in terms of just the sheer effort the parents put into was something that really came across. It was a difficult decision that they took seriously, and they considered a lot of different evidence and information to make that decision. There wasn't as much sharing of misinformation. A lot of families were really trying to learn more about it and were really actively pursuing information to inform themselves about the vaccine, the technology, side effects, benefits, and risks. And there was not as much misinformation communicated by the parents in the study as seen in other social media or other spaces.
In this particular pandemic, we used a lot of mass vaccination centers or pop-up clinics. There were buses where you could go on board to get your vaccine. How did that affect the vaccine rollout compared to just meeting in a physician's office or a nurse practitioner's office?
Some of our parents certainly brought up the fact that virtual care had just been introduced at this time, and a lot of people weren't comfortable with it yet. And often virtual appointments were only for urgent or critical matters, not just to have a discussion about what are your thoughts about the COVID-19 vaccine and is this something I should do for my child? And so there was a little bit of a barrier put between people and their family healthcare providers. We definitely saw that as a factor of adding that additional layer of uncertainty around making this decision for their own child.
Yeah, and certainly from a provider point of view, you know, those are difficult decisions to have with families or discussions to have with families over the telephone, particularly considering we weren't giving the vaccine. We weren't having the in-the-moment discussion. And there was really no opportunity for in-the-moment discussions. And so people were having discussions in different ways. And I think a lot of that fed into some challenging decisions for families.
Come practice family medicine in rural Alberta and receive incentives of up to $120,000. Enjoy lower house prices and abundant outdoor experiences. It's called the Reside Program. If you're a family physician who has been in practice for 5 years or less, see if you qualify for the Reside Program. Go to rpap.ca/reside. That's rhpap.ca/RESIDE.
Let's transition our conversation towards solutions and the future. And as we do that, Janet, let's set this conversation with the intention behavior gap. Can you just tell us what the intention behavior gap is and how that played a role in the conversations that you heard about in this research?
Well, I'll start off and then I'm going to pass it over to Jana and Catherine. But one of the things at the outset of this study was that Jonathan leads a huge cohort of research around outcomes for young children. And he'd actually had the opportunity to survey parents about sort of their intentions around vaccination and some of their attitudes around vaccination before we did this particular study. And so we had some information about what people were thinking about doing and what, how they felt about vaccination for themselves, how they felt about vaccinations for their children, their relative level of concern. And we were actually able to purposefully sample in this study to sort of ask people from a range of perspectives about that sort of these surveys were conducted prior to the vaccination coming on the market and being able to actually be administered to in real time. And so when we looked at those intentions, that was really interesting to see. You know, many people were saying that they were going to vaccinate themselves and their child, but there was a range of opinions around that. But we also know, and Jana and Catherine, I'm hoping you're going to jump in at some point, but that we also know from prior literature that there was higher intention expressed about vaccination. And then when it actually came to the decisions, what our study shows is like when people actually had to come to actually saying, okay, now am I going to do it or not? That there is that gap, right? People may express intentions, but then in the moment, those concerns come maybe flooding to the surface. And then it's actually harder to actually go forward and actually decide to vaccinate your child. But Jana and Catherine, I know that sort of came up in the interviews, so I'm handing it over to you.
Yeah, I'll just reiterate that we had looked at the literature and there was a considerable amount of work done looking at parental intention to vaccinate their child once a vaccine became available. And it was relatively high. I think 2/3 of parents in Canada said that they would vaccinate their child as soon as they could. But then we found that the actual uptake once vaccines were available was much lower. And so there was certainly an intention behavior gap there that we were interested in exploring and just understanding why are parents making this decision and how.
And to speak to that, a lot of the work that was done in this area previously was quantitative, so it involved surveys and it didn't really dig deep into parents' perspectives and to really unpack some of those ideas. And so this study really contributed an understanding of that nuances, the really complexity of these decisions around whether or not to vaccinate their children against COVID-19. And to really understand that parents' attitudes around COVID vaccination really ranged and that many had some concern, even if they were really in theory supportive of the vaccine. And that was something that was really novel in this study that contributed to that literature as well and that understanding to help address that intention and behavior gap.
So Jonathan, as a physician, what is your, so two-part question, what is your takeaway for research? And second, if you were queen for a day, because queens are more important than kings, what would you do differently regarding vaccinations in the future?
Yeah, thanks. Maybe I'll answer the second question first because I would just love to be a queen. I think if we're going to do it again, we know how to give vaccines. We know how to do vaccine rollouts for children. And it's a very personal thing for many families involving discussion and thought and the relationship that has been built between the families and their healthcare providers. Almost all children in Ontario have a healthcare provider that provides primary care for them. And we built that system on purpose over a long period of time so that we can do things like that. And that kind of fell apart a bit during the pandemic. And I think this was a consequence in part of that. And so if we were to do it again differently, I would hope that we would recognize the value in what I just said and, you know, and help us support our families and children through the relationships they have with their wonderful healthcare providers. And so I think that's the most important thing I think I would do differently. If you take a few steps back and you say, well, what if we rolled this out without all of this pressure that happened on top? Would we have done any better? And I don't know if we would have done worse. I mean, I think in terms of vaccination, it's around 30% for children right now. Could we have done better? Maybe. But I don't think we would have done worse. So I think we just need to take everything like Janet and the team were saying into context. These are very personal decisions that people make, relying on information that's trusted.
Great. Thank you guys so very much for joining us. Dr. Jonathan McGuire is a pediatrician and researcher at St. Michael's Hospital and co-leads Target Kids, a large pediatric research network. Dr. Janet Parsons is a research scientist with St. Michael's Hospital and an associate professor at the University of Toronto in the Department of Occupational Science and Occupational Therapy. And Catherine Hodswitz and Dr. Jana Weigel are clinical research specialists in the Applied Health Research Center at St. Michael's Hospital. Blair, so I have so many thoughts after this really dynamic panel, but can you tell me what jumps out at you most?
So the message that pre-existing relationships with family doctors, nurse practitioners, whoever parents were comfortable with and trusted and knew might have been the best avenue to pursue to discuss pediatric vaccinations instead of ideas like mass clinics. But then I also kind of wonder about the pragmatic angle on that. How easy is it to do that when you're trying to rapidly vaccinate people from a, you know, a new virus causing a global pandemic? But it's a really curious thought for me to think that, you know, all this information is new. All of it is somewhat, you know, there's some uncertainty to all of this, even as physicians, public health professionals, things were changing rapidly. We were learning more every day. That trusted component was probably missing for a lot of those sort of mass communications. And that's sort of a big problem and a challenge for us in the future. Can we establish trusted mass communications so that we don't have to rely on this very work-intensive, somewhat maybe not pragmatic approach of having 40 million people sit down for one-on-one conversations with their family doctors who are already completely strained under the pressures of the pandemic?
So for me, I think it's similar. I think I was really heartened to know that for people, that relationship that they have with their primary care provider, pediatrician, is really central to how they get information. It seems to me that people haven't lost faith in the healthcare system. They've lost faith in the political system that funds our healthcare system. And that the problem is not system. That doesn't fund our healthcare system. And that the problem is not that relationship, but is all the external forces on it. I heard from many friends who are family physicians that they actually wanted to have these conversations with their patients and also provide the vaccinations. They're like, we immunize kids. Mm. We immunize all the time. How is this different? So I do wonder, when we do the autopsy of this, the amount of money that we put into max vaccinations, could we have done it differently of having, you know, whether you group it by region and saying, you know, family doctors in this area of Scarborough will be available for this amount of time to talk to their patients, is booked through their clinic or whichever way we want to do it, and vaccinations are available, doing it that way where you actually bring the family doctors into the fold versus completely excluding them from the fold, right? Because I'm a general surgeon and I was given vaccinations and I was trying to have this develop a relationship with someone in 5 minutes where their family doctor has been having this relationship with them for 20 years.
Right.
And so, you know, it seems as if we got this part wrong. And this is something that there's going to be another virus that we need to actually do a proper examination of what we could have done better.
And I think teasing apart the child vaccines from adult vaccines is important too, because mass vaccinations worked very well for adults, particularly in that January when COVID was causing a lot of mortality, particularly in nursing homes. We saw Canadians roll up their sleeve and end up with very high vaccination rates in the adult population. And it does seem like we need a finer approach for the pediatric population because, you know, children are so precious and parents are so protective and take that responsibility to make the right decision for their child so heavily. Jola, in the interviews, we didn't really talk about some of the racial considerations or cultural considerations of different groups. You've worked a lot on vaccines in the Black community. Does what we talked about in the panel resonate with you when it comes to the Black community?
100%. I would say that, and I actually, because we used to say vaccine hesitance, but you know, as Dr. Weigel pointed out, that that's probably not a really great term to use for people who are just trying to make the best decision. They're not hesitant about the vaccine.
They're curious.
Maybe their hesitancy is about, yeah, they're curious and the process of this. I would say that, like, that's something that, because funding was really tied to mass vaccinations, we weren't able to actually, you know, target the people that patients already had, the doctors they already had a relationship with. Oftentimes, though, like coming to the clinic I was working in, the family doctor would be like, well, you know, 10 of my patients are coming in today. I told them to come in because I'm here today.
Right.
And those 10 patients came in. Right. And so it's almost as if we really need to change that. And it's not saying that there needs to be more that family doctors need to do. We also just need to add extra funding to help them do this job. We need to support them because they're the ones who've developed this relationship with their patients.
Well, one thing we've learned is that different people have different approaches to all these different decisions in a pandemic. And for some people, mass vaccination sites might work very well. And for others, a family doctor visit or a nurse practitioner visit might be the way to go.
Or pediatrician.
Or pediatrician, absolutely.
And so that really needs to be incorporated into our next pandemic plan for vaccinations.
And maybe there's sort of this out of the box hybrid approach where family doctors create YouTube videos or family doctors have a WhatsApp channel, or, you know, maybe family doctors can find other ways of engaging with their patients when we have sort of this mass prerogative to move quickly and rapidly at a national scale.
And if we do that, though, we need to make sure that they get compensated for the time and effort they put into taking care of the population.
As Jola and I know, all this communications and science advocacy, it's very, very labor intensive. And a lot of people have been doing it for free for the last 3 years. That's a great point.
Show them their money.
That's it for this week's episode of the CMAJ podcast. Thanks so much for joining us. And please do remember to like or share our podcast wherever it is you download your audio. I'm Blair Bigham.
I'm Mojola Male. Until next time, be well.